Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 4, Episode 7, Proxy Authentication Required. Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
I actually been dreading you asking me this because I like a lot about this episode. In fact, I like a lot about this episode so much, it makes me really question the stuff I don't. If I was going to say that I like all the cinematography, I like the acting, I majority like the writing, I really enjoyed the twist and what it does to me as an audience member and what it does to the protagonist of the show. And I like it so much, this confrontation of his childhood trauma with the sexual abuse of his father, that I'm kind of annoyed about some of the flashier art, like the synchronized thunder crashing and the ominous music cues and... In this insane sequence between Krista and Elliot, I got Varys circling around every 45 seconds. Get it, dog! Yeah! Like, it was really... That stuff was really distracting this episode. And I'm not sure... But you know, obviously, this is a really amazing episode without commercial interruption. It's almost like a little art house film unto itself. But there again, this was a great story... I felt like it was really gussied up more than it needed to be. The act title cards, all that stuff was so artificial that it got in the way of what was a really raw and amazing core. What did you think?
I think this episode was great. I like all the things that you like about it. I guess I don't have the problems. I was a little confused by what they were getting at with, you know, the act title cards and the shutting off the lights and all that stuff. But I went online and I was looking and people were saying, I mean, I'm not a stage play kind of guy. I've seen one in my life. This is very reflective of stage play. It's very Hitchcockian. It's very very much like you would, like you're sitting in a theater watching a stage play. And I think obviously that's what he was going for, but like what it, you know, what meaning that has to the episode as a whole, I don't know, but the style of it was not bothering me. It made it feel a little more intimate, I think.
Well, yeah, when they talk about bottle episodes, this is a classic example. You've got what, 5-6 people?
Yeah.
One set, 2 rooms, that you don't leave it except for the trunk scene in the beginning. There's some things I really admire about that. It's just that, I don't know, I'm thinking like this is kind of the Fly episode of Breaking Bad, but what if Vince had put title cards in front of every commercial break? And what if, you know, every time Walt said something pretending to the death of Jane, like an equipment buzzed and exploded in the background? It's like it didn't need any of that artifice. And at some point, if you don't need it to tell something to convey the emotional bandwidth, then, you know, is it extra? Is that stuff that should be peeled back? I don't know. Is like, should this be a minimalist episode? Should it be a maximalist episode? I feel like when you're handling something this potentially a kind of unprecedented or you know, like untraveled ground in television, where you're talking about the nexus of like mental illness and child abuse and sexual trauma and therapy, you shouldn't layer on a bunch of icing on that cake. But you know, I feel like I'm the minority view in that, but it's just every single time, especially the second time I watched, with the lightning crashing and the thunder rolling and the minor chords jumping, kind of going for a Kubrickian The Shining kind of thing, but it just didn't quite get there because Kubrick didn't do that, The Shining stuff in Dr. Strangelove. And I feel like there was a little bit of The Shining in this episode. And I don't know, like, I guess I can see if Sam Esmail is going for this is kind of a horror tale, But I don't know. I just thought it was distracting. The fact that I'm trying to figure out like what the hell was, you know, was he just underlining points that I didn't feel like to me? Yeah. And I don't want to do the thing where I have to explain my criticism for 15 minutes and make it seem like I hated the episode when I really didn't. And these are just, I liked it so much. I'm like, God, could it have been better? I would love to see edited this with all that stuff stripped away.
Okay. I mean, I didn't have a problem with it. I thought the lightning crashing, like all of the storm building was appropriate given the storm that was building in the plot of the episode. And to me, it really just all kind of was of a piece. It all brought me into it even more as opposed to sort of like what it seems like happened to you is it brought you out of it.
Yeah.
I will give you like Vera, you know, strutting around going, come on, dog, let's fucking get to the point here. Yeah. I want that 24 karat.
Hit this therapy raw, dog. You're like,
at some point that's a little distracting, but it's supposed to be. I mean, like in those scenes, yes, it's distracting. Like he's disruptive to the whole process. And when it's only when, you know, he finally like just settles down, steps back and, you know, stops interfering that Elliot can actually get to, or, you know, he also pulls out the files and he stops, just interjecting nonsense.
He's also the, you know, he's the stick in the situation. He's applying the pressure. Without him being there, this conversation wouldn't happen. So I mean
it's hilarious that
he's this dog kind of nipping at their heels anytime things kind of get slow or whatever. But I just you know, it did bring me out a bit, and I wonder if there wasn't some techniques they could do to minimize it. But what I think I read in many places, this is like the perfect episode with like over 10,000 votes on IMDb.
Oh yeah, it has a 10.0 rating. Yeah. And it's like the second highest rated episode of television ever.
Yeah. So like clearly this is a quality episode of television, and
it's fantastic.
So now let me heap on the praise, because in isolation I have some quibbles about how, you know, S-Mail decided to get the highlighter out and highlight some things, but as this fits in the story of Mr. Robot, I thought it was incredible how like in real time I was mentally going back over every interaction I knew about Elliot and his dad and thinking, holy shit, this mentally ill kid that was such a bastard to his dad when he had cancer. You know, he's now all of these things where it's like he's talking about opening up a computer store and he's letting him slide on stealing money and he's taking him to movies that are probably not age appropriate. Like, this seems like classic grooming behavior. And it also highlights the plight of children stuck in the situation and why so many people don't believe children when they're in the situations, because like we were the audience, we were the neighbors that just saw like what a great dad he was, and you know how, man, Elliot's really a troubled, difficult child, and we never thought like, holy shit, maybe there's something, you know, maybe we should just believe that it's this kid that's traumatized and he's pain and he's angry, there's like a fucking reason for that. And the way it kind of judo flipped me as an audience member and made me think about all that stuff you know, makes me think about, you know, Elliot's relationship with his family all around. And I wouldn't even be mad if this is the flip or the reveal that S-Mail was talking about. Like, you know, we think he's talking about the third personality. He's actually talking about the sexual abuse, because like clearly this has been, you know, this has either been layered from the very beginning or
from the first scene, I think.
It has to. Either that or like he's trying to pass off the mother of all strip mining from the past to build the present, like we talked about, and like he was just watching his own show and realized writing season three, holy shit, look what I've got here. Like, that's the only two options, and neither one of them is amazing. So like what this does for Mr. Robot is, I think, depending on, you know, how the next five episodes go or whatever, but it seems like it could be completely altered the landscape of the show.
Yeah, I think it's amazing how it recontextualized all of the stuff we've seen before, but in a very specific way, like revolving around a character that's already been completely recontextualized in the first season. Like, they've already taken Elliot's dad and made a huge twist on that. Now they've done it again here in season four. It's kind of amazing that they can take the same character.
Yeah.
Do we get any actual interaction with Elliot's dad in the series? We don't know at this point, because the barrier between, like, the difference between Elliot's dad and Mr. Robot is a hair's width here. Like,
yeah.
I don't know where one begins and the other ends. Like,
yeah,
the idea, I'm very much questioning, like, the idea of whether Mr. Robot actually reflects anything about Elliot's dad at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it seems like he was the person created to be the dad that his dad should have been, the one that would protect him from threats.
Yeah, and it almost makes me wonder if, like, maybe this is kind of my own headcanon here, but I'm thinking, like, Elliot's dad was nothing like Mr. Robot, and Mr. Robot is actually shaped more on the owner of the computer store, which kind of drove, you know, Elliot to get into computers, and, like, it could have spawned his entire personality, right? Like, the idea that Mr. Robot and Elliot could be sort of feeding off of each other in that way.
You don't think his dad is the same person who owns the Mr. Robot store?
I don't know at this point.
Hmm.
I'd have to go back and watch those episodes again where they introduced that.
I guess I'm trying to resist the temptation of, like, throw everything out that we know. Like, mm-hmm. that, like, I'm guessing that the show hasn't ever lied to us.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the times where it's already told us that it's lied. Like,
but we've misread so much is my point.
True.
Like,
yeah, that's true.
You know, when he sees photographs of himself and his quote unquote father happy together, is that mm-hmm. because he's seeing a different face on that body and he's seeing the personality that he's created in his head as Mr. Robot? Is he would Darlene recognize their father in that photograph as looking like Mr. Robot?
Well, I don't know, because this also is. I thought a lot about that Michael Jackson documentary that came out. Was it that this year? Is this, like, the world's longest year?
I think that
okay,
was this
so
year.
I'm getting vigorous nodding from the production booth that it was this year. And, you know, one of the things is, like, all these pictures of, like, them smiling with Michael Jackson while this abuse is going on. And you mm-hmm. realize that, like, you know, these people love their abuser, and the abuse is only happening a fraction of the time that they're together. And, you know, one of the things it seems like his dad did was, you know, use instances of leniency or, like, oh, you're ready for this adult thing as a way to bond with Elliot. And also, it seems like his mom's a real piece of shit, too. Like, she was abusing mm-hmm. him and, you know, like, burning him, putting cigarettes out in his arms and shit. That, like, he might have very well seemed like, you know, the good parent. And so, like, I don't have any problem thinking that Elliot would smile at pictures of his dad, but also still have this giant pit being dug out in his chest all the while it's happening. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't pretend to know the ins and outs of the psychology of children's survivors of sexual assault, but, like, it seems like this is consistent with what can, but that's the other, I guess, criticism I have, which I don't even know is a criticism, is, like, the psychology of this show is so out there. Like, I think these kind of split personalities are almost like a science fiction concept. And some of this, like what they're playing with, like, repressed memories, and also just, like, this is not clinically sound practice what's happening here in this episode.
Oh, of course.
Like,
yeah, you don't usually do therapy
that, like,
at gunpoint.
Krista's insisting upon that, but it's like one of those things where it's like, I really like the story they're telling, and I think there's a lot of elements that are grounded in, you know, reality, and it felt real to me, but then there's a lot of things that are so far out there and dramatized that, like, I think there's a temptation for people to watch an episode like this and be like, ah, I get it.
Okay. Let's get into the episode. Let's talk about the title first. Proxy Authentication Required. Very much felt like, so this error is when you're trying to log in, or you're trying to connect to a server, but there's a proxy in between and you don't have the authentication credentials. Very much felt like what Mr. Robot is doing here, mm-hmm. being the proxy between Elliot and his repressed memories, and Krista and the memories, and everybody in the memories. So pretty apt name. Let's get into the recap.
Some housekeeping for this week. Over at swizzbold.com, Cecily and I are debuting One Weird Trick. It's Cecily and I's new lifestyle and advice podcast. We do a bit of an intro, then give some advice on dealing with nosy coworkers and losing your religion. On Pickle Me This, are you a private pooper? If so, this week's episode of Rick and Morty is for you. Check us out at Pickle Me This. On Bald Move Television, Alexis and Cecily are covering His Dark Materials, aka that one HBO show where the creepy menacing chick just can't stop spanking her monkey. Also, Jim and I talked to Mandalorian last week. Check it out. Bald Movies, really busy time. Last week we talked about Ford Ferrari, a very masculine macho show. This week we'll be talking about A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Can A-Ron make it through without sobbing like Donald Glover being sung the Reading Rainbow theme by LeVar Burton? Find out on the Bald Movies feed. And of course, we're still getting weird with The Watchmen over on WeDo. If any of these podcasts sound interesting, just go to baldmove.com and check them out, or search for the show name wherever you're listening to your podcasts.
We start off with Act One, big fat title card there. Elliot's in the trunk, and Vera has him brought to Krista's house and tells him a story about a shaman who showed him where his home is and how he can get back there. Spoiler alert, it's New York, and he can get back there by turning Elliot into his partner. Before Elliot agrees to anything to go along with Vera's plan, he demands to see that Krista's safe, and Vera agrees to that but says he'll want his own introduction afterward, very ominously. And Vera is smoking meth or crack or something all the way through this whole episode. So I don't know how you function. I really don't.
Tolerance, I guess. Sure. If Mr. Robot's to be believed, he's a crazy meth head who thinks he's Deepak Chopra.
yeah.
So, yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, these guys smoking meth and are still, like, being able to hold this, like, kind of, like, intense psychological conversation.
There's a lot of information in here about Vera and sort of what he's been up to and how he sees himself and his goals and such. And I think a lot of it is interesting. I like this shaman stuff. What I'm not so sure about is his ability to take over the entirety of two countries.
Yeah.
In 87 days.
I mean, this is why I invented the phrase tot dab, right? Like the idea, the only reason this time frame exists because the show has taken place over this time frame.
Right.
Like, I would love to know what he means by owning the Dominican Republic. I would love to know what he means by that, because like 87 days is maybe enough time to violently take over someone else's drug distribution and kind of like that's still, but like you really got the cops already, the politicians, like the military, it's like all these other powerful institutions. You can worm your way into them in like less than 87 days. It seems unrealistic, but then again, the show has to have it that way, right?
They do, yeah. There's a lot of stuff about Vera that seems like, well, the show needs it to be this way.
Also, Vera's just crazy. Like, the idea, like there's several points in this episode where the various aspects of Elliot's personality stand up to him and say, like, you're delusional. You don't have, like, your reach far exceeds your grasp. Like, you're just not capable with this meth pipe of doing the things that you want to talk about.
It's not even, in my mind, it's not even that his reach exceeds his grasp. It's more that he doesn't even understand the reach and the grasp he needs to accomplish. He doesn't even understand what the grasp means. Like, he's, and I think that's why when, it doesn't bother me a ton when they say, oh yeah, I took over the Dominican Republic and Haiti in 87 days.
He took over a neighborhood, maybe.
He took it over in his own definition, which is obviously small-minded, is obviously not legitimately taking over the country. You know, he says, oh, I got politicians in my pocket. He probably had some dude on a city council and was like, fuck yeah, I got the government, baby.
Right. Like, And he was essentially treating him like Stringer Bell. If he'd stuck around an island, he would have like been taken for a ride.
Yeah. So I can almost believe that in his own mind, Vera would say, I took over these two countries in 87 days.
Yeah. Yeah. But that,
I think we're supposed to realize that by the end of this episode.
I think so, because he's just not prepared to do the things that he needs to do.
Yeah. There's some really good stuff in here. This episode has its moments of surprising comedy, like when he's talking about the shaman experience, he drinks the liquid and he's shitting and he's puking back and forth. And then
plus it's a mixture of the red blood and the titty milk. Titty milk.
And later in the episode, which is hilarious because Mr. Robot calls back to this and he says, like, if this is really your plan, you need to go back to that shaman and keep shitting because you're full of bullshit.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, so fucking good. That's the best line of the episode, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, he kind of portrays himself as, you know, being this extraordinarily successful gangster who has taken over two countries. And then when he got everything he wanted, he fell empty. So now he's got to come home. And the shaman, you know, over the course of his trip, kind of made him understand that home is New York and the thing that he needs here is Elliot. And it kind of neatly explains why he's back. I think, like, the idea that he's professed in previous episodes about, oh, I'm going to make Elliot my partner. I'm glad to have this context,
mm-hmm.
because even if he's delusional, it sheds some light on what he's thinking.
It is interesting because there's this question where I think the show knows it has to have an answer and it gives one that seems reasonable but doesn't stand up to scrutiny is when, you know, Elliot's like, why did you look for me 2 months ago and you've been biding your time? He's like, I had to prepare, brah. And I'm like, well, how have you been preparing? Because, yeah. like, what you did is snatch Krista on Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did that require 2 months of planning? I
think he was looking for the bat. Is what he's looking for.
So he was just having his people follow every day, and they never. Yeah. Maybe he was looking for.
Yeah, what's the thing that's actually going to turn Elliot? Because if he goes to Elliot,
the sister, nothing there with any of the other.
I mean, he's already done this to Elliot, right? He's already like tried to muscle Elliot, and it didn't fucking work.
Yeah.
Like Elliot.
Yeah, I was just saying that. Prison. They did address it, and I don't know. Maybe it is as satisfying as it needs to be, but I'm thinking like, yeah, why, and if you're. If you're Vera, what point did the introduction 2 months ago to Darlene's sister make? You know, like why? It's kind of like, you know, if you got the element of surprise is something you could use, but before you have a plan and you know what you're going to do and but you're self-aware enough to realize you need a plan, you're just going to be like, hey, looking for Elliot and ghost him for 2 months to do a recon. Like, it seems like you do the recon and then...
And then just show up.
Yeah. Or I don't know. Maybe it's a psychological... Because he clearly thought a lot about his gangster psychology. So, like, maybe, like, that's part of the preparation is putting in the back of Elliot's mind that... Joke's on you. His third personality kept it from him. So all that... That's
right.
All that psychology didn't work.
Yep.
Didn't work. Elliot got blindsided anyway. So there you go, you dumb fuck.
All right. Anything else in Act 1? Or should we move on?
Act 2.
All right. Act 2.
Shitting... And act
lots
two.
More puking. All right, Act 2, Vera takes Elliot to see Krista and then demands to be introduced to Mr. Robot, and he has to threaten Krista until Mr. Robot takes over. Vera tries to psychoanalyze Elliot and Mr. Robot to figure out where Robot came from. Mr. Robot kind of takes over this conversation and steers it to Vera's nebulous plan to take over New York. After Mr. Robot thoroughly shreds that plan, Elliot offers to help Vera rob from money itself, as he says, by giving him the cash he plans to steal from Deus later that night.
Yeah, I really like how he just like really effectively pushed back against Vera. It's like, oh, you want to be a drug dealer? Well, Pfizer and Lilly have got you beat by billions, and if you ever made noise, they would rub you out. If you want to be a bit in real estate, buying the city is essentially just buying credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll just own a mortgage that you have to own to the bank. It's like.
Yeah.
You know, but then this is like, I think the one of the most fucking Sam Esmail things ever written, it's not about how much money, it's about robbing money itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I don't know, what the fuck does that mean? But I started really thinking about like in this in terms of the hack, like what is the top point? What is the statistic? Like the top 1% owns half the wealth in the world, something like that.
Probably. I don't know. It's a big number. Sure.
Maybe it's a 2/3 of the wealth in the world. Like, what would happen if you made that money disappear?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and how would you even do that? Like in the Joker, in the Dark Knight, the Joker stacks this all up in a pyramid and lights it on fire.
Yeah.
Like, but that doesn't destroy the value. And I kept thinking, it's like, well, how would you? How would that work if you just like if someone like transferred the top 1%'s wealth into a private account somewhere and just absconded with it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, would that be as easy as undoing like a bit? Because you're not destroying the value. That's the thing. Like, I think the people like, you know, that like freak out about, you know, money not being quote unquote backed by anything. It is backed by things. It's backed by mm-hmm. values of companies and homes and dirt and oil. And like
the government.
if you went in and hacked a computer to made all the barrels of oil in the world worth $0, guess what?
The oil's still there.
They still have, and that still has intrinsic value. And like, so I'm like,
you're essentially erasing the score is all you're doing, right?
Yeah.
But the people with connections and the people who own property are still own that stuff and still have those connections, and they will reestablish their power and their dominance almost immediately.
Yeah, it's like if you went in like an NBA Finals or the Super Bowl, better example, 5 minutes to go in a fourth quarter, hacked a scoreboard to make it go 0-0.
Yeah.
Like, 250 million people have been watching this game live. We know what the score was or can approximate it. Like, this might cause chaos and it might take a while to figure out. And maybe that's it, that like White Rose, this Congo hack, is so sensitive that like having all of her money disappear for even a day or two would fuck her over. But it feels like it's something more permanent than that. And I was just thinking like, oh God, I hope S-Mail's got something that's going to make sense, because you can't. You can't just Rick and Morty this. You can't just set the value of a dollar to zero, or you can't just like take all of White Rose's money and that's the end of the story, because White Rose still has an army. White Rose still owns like all the governments of the world. White Rose has a tight grip on all the telecommunication systems. Like, it's just like hacking the Super Bowl scoreboard. It's going to do nothing.
Yeah, I really wonder if this show is going to end on an uplifting note, or if it's going to be kind of bleak, because like when I think back to when Bobby Cannavale's character Irving took Elliot to that building and was talking, or Tyrell to that, was it Tyrell or Elliot?
Which building?
Looking at the building where the rich were partying after the 5-9 Like, they didn't give a fuck.
Right.
And he said, like, basically, there's nothing you can do to these people. This 5-9 hack does nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the things that we just talked about, all the
connections.
In fact,
all you're doing
is
setting them up to buy, to rebuy all the things that everyone's lost.
Right.
At half off.
Look at the crash in 08, right? Like the real estate crash. Like half of the real estate that was taken from the people who were living in the houses was bought up by developers, and it's just being fucking flipped or now rented back to the people who couldn't afford to buy it in the first place
at double the price.
Right. Like, the people who benefit the most from these events are the people who have the money to capitalize on those events.
Yeah.
And you know, you take the money out of the equation, they still have fucking connections. They still have willpower, the government willpower, the
favors,
the
secrets,
corporate willpower. Right. They have all the advantages. Mm-hmm. All you're doing is resetting the scoreboard, like you said, and letting the people who have the intrinsic advantages run up the score in the next half.
Right. That's like, oh, we were beating your team 42-7. Well, now it's 103-7.
Right.
Yeah.
Because so I wonder
interest,
if the end of the show
interest on the points while we're figuring everything out.
I wonder if the end of the show is going to be just that, where Elliot tries yet again to take the power back, and he's just, he can't. He's impotent. He's ineffectual because he doesn't have the same power that these people have.
Yeah.
And in that, if that's the case, then I could see not even needing, you know, some kind of grand explanation.
No, I mean, like, there's also a way. There's a way that could be uplifting. Like, you know, Braveheart gets his guts ripped out at the end of Braveheart. Sorry for the 30-year-old spoilers. But he inspires a generation of Scotsmen to throw off the evil tyranny of the, I don't even know, the, like, y'all are in one country now. I'm sure I don't want to rip opening old wounds, but you know what I'm saying? Like, because I think the message here is like, okay, if Sam Elliott's hypothesis is we're all essentially living in the company store, you know, and it's like, oh, the boss says we got $5 extra a week, but oh man, the can of beans just went up $4.99. Shit. There's no way any one person can be like, well, this is stupid. I'm not going to pay $4.99 for beans, or I'm going to hack the label so beans are a penny, or maybe they have to pay us 10 cents for beans, because we're still living in the company store, and the company can, like, no matter what we do, like momentary prank or hijink, they're going to make things right. The only way you can do is get everyone together and say, you know what, we're not working your mines. We're not buying shit from a company store. We'll starve and burn our own house. And so it can't be just Elliot and F society. All of society has to go and say, fuck this, and unify. And I think that could be uplifting or not. Like, does Elliot inspire a revolution or an evolution or like an honest brokering conversation in society? Or is Elliot going to suffer a maximum penalty and then we just go back to the way things are, where it's like, hey, we're happy that beans are half price this week. Thank God. Stock up on beans.
Yeah.
You know?
A downbeat ending can certainly be a motivational spark for people, too. When, you know, if they don't have to be shown a way out, but if they're shown like a potential awful future, that could also be motivating.
Sure.
So yeah, it could go either way. What else about this? I liked when Mr. Robot was talking with Vera, where he's like, I can't remember the exact conversation, but his line about I am the gun very much struck me as like being a more powerful than this aluminum bat that Vera keeps talking about, but also it connects Elliot and Vera with this metaphor, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. Mr. Robot is Elliot's bat and shield, you know. He's a lot of things to Elliot, but one of the things is he's his bat. He's the kind of the instigator of 5-9. Like, he pushes Elliot to do things that are potentially good for him, you know, at least in Mr. Robot's judgment. And I think Vera very much like is they're kindred spirits in a way. Like, you get over the course of this episode that they have a lot more in common than you thought they did when we first met them.
Yeah, I can buy that.
Let's go on to Act 3.
Okay.
Start off with Elliot showing Vera the amount of cash he's about to steal, and they freak out over this. He uses that as a distraction to pull the gun from his bag. Unfortunately, the bullets have been removed by Vera's goons. Vera's pissed that Elliot tried to kill him, and he decides he's going to kill Krista, but he changes his mind when Elliot says he needs her, because he reads that as her being his shaman.
Crash of thunder. Come on.
Yes. More thunder. We were questioning, I think, in the previous episodes whether Elliot still had the gun from the van
still
that he picked
it
up. Still has it. I was really going to call bullshit, too, if there were bullets in that gun. I was prepared. I saw that gun. I'm like, aren't you kidding me? They didn't check his bag.
But you, and I then, can almost buy it because they're
all
competent, but like to a point, you know? How yeah. competent are you smoking bowls of meth?
Mm-hmm.
I would say not very. But, you know.
Yeah.
But the realization of Krista is his shaman, like, this is the thing that makes sense to Vera. Because,
yes.
you know, like, Vera is not extremely well-read or educated, but, like, he learns experientially, and he knows the value of having a good head shrink. And mm-hmm. he realizes that he's inadequate to be the one asking the questions and guiding Elliot to the place he needs to be.
Yeah, I did like that. The fact that, you know, he realizes, like, I can't have this breakthrough with him. He needs to have it with his shaman, just like I did. I don't have a lot more on Act 3.
Nope.
Act 4 is where the real meat is.
Sure does.
We start a therapy session.
Sure does? What the fuck?
Sure
Don't let me
does.
Get away with that shit.
The meat sure does.
Has a lot of meat. Sure does. Well, I guess, does that actually track?
I said that's where the meat is, and you said sure does.
Oh, see? Mm-mm. That doesn't. Sure does. Are you hungry, Aaron? Sure does. Okay,
get
Jim.
Her done. All right, we go to Act 4, which begins with a therapy session at gunpoint. Not, I don't think, the way it's usually done, but I don't know.
None of my therapists have ever held a gun to my head. Maybe I should go and ask
imagine
for my
the
money
breakthrough.
Back.
Yeah,
that's
imagine
what I'm thinking.
How
that's
quickly.
I'm thinking, right.
That's just a stalling tactic. They're just milking you.
I'm going to break through your skull or this bullet will.
Krista and Mr. Robot are extremely reluctant to get to the root of why Mr. Robot is created. Vera reads from Krista's notes on Elliot, which makes Elliot curious, so he demands to know why this event, the day that he was pushed out the window by his father, was so important to him. And Krista guides him to the conclusion that he was sexually abused by his father. And I have to say, this acting job is incredible. Like, Rami Malek is so good going from like anger and confusion to sadness and grief and like pain. And this, you have to give it, look, he won a fucking Emmy for season 1.
Uh-huh.
There's no comparison. This is 10 times better than anything he did in season 1.
Oh yeah. And you know, he had a great dance partner, Gloria Rubin, there with him.
Yeah.
And that's why
Christian
I'm saying it was
Slater and Elliot Villar, like, all these, everybody in this fucking scene is outstanding. I don't know how you pick a best supporting actor.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like Vera kept on like defacing this beautiful painting I was seeing. And I, like I said, that might be kind of the point, but
huh.
I don't know. I like I said, I don't want to bitch and moan about it, but like, yeah, every single time I was like really getting into performance. And there's also this neat technique where it's like, did not see this twist coming before this episode, but like, I saw it coming long time before Elliot did. And yet it still didn't feel like, a lot of times when that happens, I feel impatient because I'm like, geez, this is a smart character. But like the way they were playing it, this was like layers of like trauma and repression that was being broke, and it felt like, you know, breaking through with a hammer.
Yeah. And when you've got Mr. Robot there too, saying, please don't do this. Like, he's not ready for this. Like, you're fighting a bigger battle here. And so the extra time that it takes.
It gave us that time to like have the realization and pick a side and join Mr. Robot and Krista being kind of scared about like the traumatic surgery that's happening on this guy's brain.
And being afraid for Elliot, right? Like, what is this going to do to Elliot? I think having Vera there shouting, like, get this fucking done.
Yeah.
Is a danger element. Like, that makes me scared for Elliot. Not that that Vera's going to put a bullet in its head, but what it's going to do to his fucking head when he finally does have this breakthrough.
Yeah. And there was the last little bit of levity before we had this fall where, like, you know, Krista makes all these valid points about what a bad idea all this is. And like Vera's one concession as well. I'll kick my two flunkies out of the room. And they're like, I don't know, man. I kind of personally invested in seeing where this goes. And them calling Krista a cabbage ass bitch or something.
I have no idea.
That's the last grim chuckle you get out of this episode. But I'm glad it was there.
I felt like them I had empathy for these characters being kicked out of this room because I did not want to shut the episode off at this point.
Yeah, can you imagine being like this happening in front of you and someone kicking you out?
Right. Mm. And they hadn't even spent, you know, 4 years with Elliot, whereas we have. So, yeah, it really worked for me. And I look at kind of the conclusion of this scene where, you know, he was being sexually abused by his father, and I start to recontextualize everything we know, and right down to the first scene of this entire series where he's sitting down in Ron's coffee and busting this child predator, this guy who's got a child pornography ring that he's running. That was all set up, I think, from day one. Like Esmail knew where he was going with this show. And in my opinion, it shows.
Yeah. Why, you know, and it's one of those things where it seems that's the great thing about this reveal is it makes perfect sense in retrospect. It doesn't force us to throw out any information that we knew before. It just causes us to recontextualize everything.
Yeah.
And like I said, I haven't seen them all, but I was going through a lot of threads and like looking at like, you know, different interactions with them. And there's one really arresting one where, you know, Elliot is angry with his father because he's sick and he won't admit it.
Is that in the theater?
I think so, because I saw these out of context and I'm like, man, that's an amazing double entendre because we're talking about like, I still think that Elliot's dad had cancer. Mm-hmm. That seems to be verified by outside sources, but it also has a dual meaning. And like the secrets he's asking Elliot to keep and the things that his mom is angry about finding out, like, you know, you shuffle the cards and you play sex abuse rather than cancer, how they're having some of these conversations and everything takes on such a more ominous twist. And it's been a minute since I've seen a twist paid off this. I guess the first season of Westworld was like that too.
But imagine if they had a yet another twist
And this taking place over four seasons and like everybody thinking about like, I remember having a conversation and in fact, I think like I even had I remember having people conversations of like, imagine being Elliot's dad and dying of cancer and you got this, you know, psychologically troubled child and they're being such a shit to you. And man, really, really threw us for a judo flip.
Yeah, for sure. There's also a line in here. When Mr. Robot realizes his usefulness is at an end, he says, I can't protect you anymore. And he stands up and walks out of the room or out of frame anyway. And then he's not seen again. Do you think we're going to see him again now that Elliot has broken through?
Something that some people asked us in feedback. I'm guessing yes. But I don't know, because like, again, this is where the sci-fi aspect of this psychology comes in. Like, is Elliot ultimately in control? Can he like does he have control, or is this something that's out of his conscious control? Because if it's out of his conscious control, whatever created Mr. Robot to protect him could call on that again when he needs protecting or needs to be tough. Or I guess we could be seeing this as the integration. It would be interesting if this is the integration of like him and Mr. Robot, but then there's now the third personality that we're going to meet.
Right.
So like, I guess I could see it either way.
Played by Christian Slater.
I was going to say, I could also see like, you know, the edgy the evil Mr. Robot is Christian Slater with like a little bit of an edge to him, or just like, you know, more angry, more grimacy. I don't know. I could buy either way. Seems plausible right now.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to future
episodes.
Do you have a
side of the scale that you're on?
I think I'm just slightly over the edge to we will see him again, because I think his usefulness is more than simply cordoning off Elliot's memories. Like you said, if he needs protection, I think Mr. Robot is a perfectly fine personality to fall back on.
But like Varys said, that like Mr. Robot's not the scary one. Mr. Robot's the bark, Elliot's the bite.
Yeah, I almost think he wants, like, I would want him to have a conversation with Mr. Robot about why he was needed in the first place and why he kept things from him. And like, because this episode does not directly it does not put Elliot and Mr. Robot directly in conflict. Mm-hmm. It like kind of does it with a proxy via Krista and this therapy, and I would like a scene between the two actors, Remy and Christian, but
right,
I don't know that it's necessary. This could be a perfectly good sign off for Christian Slater, and I would feel satisfied.
It does feel like Mr. Robot and Elliot should team up against this third personality that's working against them, though.
Could be.
Like, yeah. I could see, like, even if it's the last episode, and they're
depending on who that is.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, and then we get to Act 5. It's the aftermath of Elliot's breakthrough, where Vera is trying to empathize with him, revealing that he was also sexually abused as a child, and steer his grief into the partnership he's been wanting for the entire season, telling him that living through this pain makes him special and powerful. And just as Vera is about to get everything he wants with Elliot as his partner, Krista puts a knife in his back, killing him.
I want to... And then the power cuts off sequentially. Is that... Yeah. Are you supposed to understand that that's a real thing that's happening, or is that a dramatic effect?
No, I think it's a stage play dramatic effect.
Because thing. This is now... Aren't we... We've got to be very close to when the Deus group is beating...
Extremely, yeah. I'm going to say it could be like 5:30, 6 p.m., something like that. He might still have a few hours. Because this starts in daylight and it ends in the evening, and late December would be very dark.
Like 5, 6 o'clock.
Yeah. So we could be like 6 p.m. He's got a few hours.
Okay. All right. But, yeah, I guess that's true. Because I was thinking, like, is this a synchronicity where, like, Elliot's already missed the thing and, like,
that
the
could
result
also be true.
Of the hack is that his power's getting cut? Like, I don't know. Or is this White Rose's countermeasure to it? Or, like, I'm trying to think of, like...
Deus is like, well, guys, we lost our money.
I don't think power works
on.
That way. You know, it doesn't shut off section of the room at a time.
It's, right, right.
But, you know, a lot of... That's also, because here's the thing. When I watched this the first time, I thought what was going to happen was that, because, you know, Krista starts to, like, do the therapist thing where she's now going to go into, like, support and caring for him and that consoling mode. And, like, Vera cuts her off and's like, nah, this is where I heal the soul. Mm-hmm. And, like, he kept on, you know... Again, I don't have a master of all the psychology, but like, you know, when he goes, he's in wounded animal mode, and when he and Vera just kept on violating his physical and emotional boundaries, which I imagine is something you don't want to do to someone who's just confessed this thing, because they're in a vulnerable state. They're feeling the vulnerability they felt as a child. They're feeling that same vulnerability as an adult, and I think it's very important in building them back up. Is like if they say something like "Don't touch me" or "Stop saying these things," like they're looking for any way that they have control. And I think a lot of well-meaning people might grab a person and be, you know, hug them and like, "Don't push me away. I love you." But like that's then you forcing yourself on them, re-traumatizing them.
That's exactly what Vera's doing here.
Right, but
fast,
and I'm like,
forward therapy.
And I say, well, this isn't going to work, and Elliot's going to, instead of ingratiating to him, Elliot's going to see him for what he is, and he himself is going to break free.
And there is a moment where he starts to do that, right? He turns to Vera, and he's like, you did that. You're the problem.
But Vera beat him, and I think my reading of the situation is that Vera was well on his way to getting what he wanted until Krista stepped in with the knife. And that's another thing I'm not sure how I feel about, because I felt like the whole episode is telling me that Vera is not ready for this. Vera is not, you know, all this shaman meth shit is going to just leave you with a stick up your ass when it comes to dealing with this. And the fact it was starting to work before at the end kind of confused me.
I agree with your confusion. I felt it too a little bit, but I think they've done enough with Vera as a keenly insightful character. Like, he understands people.
He's like intuiting it. Yeah.
He doesn't understand fucking politics and power and shit like that, but he does understand people.
Yeah. At least the dark side, because he's able to navigate and exploit the dark side.
And so I kind of gave them a lot of leeway on that. Huh. But but I feel you. It did feel like the entire episode felt very dangerous for Elliot. I was extremely worried that he would not come out of this. And I still don't know how he's come out of this, right? Like,
because I think one of the things that's made this season work is there's several times where I thought, oh, they could just kill Elliot. And then this could be Darlene and Dom's story.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't even be mad. And like, whenever I think about that, I'm like, oh shit, if Sam Elliott realizes that, then he can kill Elliot. And, you know, so it's like, so that this being the final season, it's just kind of like the final season of Breaking Bad, where it's like, probably not, but you could kind of see where Walt would die mid-season. This turns into Jesse's story. Like, I'm feeling that possibility is there, and that gives these scenes juice.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. So let me ask you this. After all is said and done here, how does this affect Elliot's plans for how does this affect Elliot in the future, period?
Man, that's
the hack that he's supposed to do in
all the shit
a few
that's
hours.
Happened with Olivia, with Vera, with Krista, and he's like maybe 3 hours away from the biggest hack of his life with the most powerful people in the world.
Yep.
And
his sister is currently a captive. He doesn't know this yet, but his sister is captive.
Like, there's
White
no
Rose.
Good news. It's just worse news. You saying it this way, I hadn't even thought of that. But like, man, how realistic is it going to feel if like Elliot just fucking beasts through the next few episodes with?
Yeah.
But I don't know. He's got the way to do it. Like, if he just disassociates from the emotional side and just retreats heavily into the Mr. Robot, he could probably do that. It would be very damaging for him. And, you know, maybe they're setting him up to be like a Christ figure, that he's just sacrificing his fragile sanity to pull off this hack and try to get his sister safe, try to get, you know, society safe. I don't know.
What about Krista? Do you think there's any possibility that we see Krista go along this journey with him as his new kind of Mr. Robot, his sort of like shaman
guy? If I'm Krista, I'm calling the cops and fuck y'all next episode. Like, cause like, you know, like is Krista a real person or is she an action heroine? Because if she's a real person, she just calls the cops and says like, you know, Elliot, you can bust out of here if you want, but I'm staying here. I'm calling the cops. I'm calling my boyfriend. I'm going to cry for weeks. Like, I don't think she's inspired to, this isn't the, who was it, the airline stewardess that Arnold Schwarzenegger picked up in Commando is going to like fire the rocket launcher in the wrong direction and have hijink. No, she's, I think she needs to sit it out.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. I think this also, you know, with the death of Vera, it's funny to me that everyone was speculating, and myself included, speculating that Vera is the agent of chaos, that White Rose and Philip and Deus, none of them can see coming.
Nope.
All that's just nothing now.
Yeah.
Like, Vera's gone. I don't think any of the chaos he caused is going to affect the plans. So.
Yeah. It's not going to hurt the White Rose part of the plan. It could hurt the Elliot side of it. But
at the same time, I think they did a really good job integrating Vera into this season. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, like, yes, the show needed him to be there to push Elliot to this breakthrough that would have taken probably years with Krista working on it to do it in the span of 2 hours, right? The show needed that. But also, I think they laid the groundwork for that with all of the stuff with Vera in season two and season one, like sending him to prison, having him, you know, they kind of fill in the backstory here a little bit.
The fact that they've done this before, and he had the blade from his brother,
and he beat him, and now he's got this newfound respect for him, and worships him. Like, all of that stuff needed to be there to make Vera work, and I think they did a great job laying the groundwork, even though I thought Vera was kind of not the best parts of seasons one and two.
Mm-hmm. But it's kind of
was
like,
he in
you know,
two?
How
shit,
huh?
Was he even in season two? Did he make it to season two?
Well, I thought so.
Okay.
Maybe not. Because I thought that he was there was some kind of thing after the prison plot that he
there was Elliot busted him out of prison, right?
But there wasn't that in season. And then I thought he busted his brother. Yeah, he busted his brother.
Well, his brother betrayed him with Elliot for something. I can't remember.
Yeah,
and then he had to kill
his brother.
These
events, but I couldn't tell if they're season one or season two.
Yeah, fair. Okay. Yeah, but I don't know. I think they did a good job with Vera.
Yeah, overall. No, it's like, imagine if he'd just come in at the, like, out of nowhere. Like, that's one of the one criticisms. I feel like I'm comparing this a lot to Breaking Bad, but, like, one of the one criticisms of the final season of Breaking Bad is that, you know, you had the neo-Nazi plot. Like, you know, they'd spent all the good villains, so here comes the neo-Nazis, and it's like, where did these guys come from?
They're
but, like,
guys.
Imagine if Walt had tangled with them in the early days of the meth in, like, season one and two, and there's history, and then they show back up, like...
Yeah,
that would have been, so like, even if it wasn't the strongest stuff, like having that foundation makes this so much better than if he just like some random weirdo from the Dominican Republic comes up talking a bunch of shit.
And yet I also felt like this episode could just have been a film to itself. Like you could take this, put another 30 minutes into it and have an extremely satisfying stage play, extremely satisfying film.
Yeah, probably. I've seen some what the fuck film projects, but there's also like that there is a lot of the history that makes it work. Like a lot of like the and also props to Mr. Robot, because I think a lesser show, speaking of the art and the questionable choices, would have like filled that scene with Rami Malek losing his mind with a bunch of flashbacks to like all the scenes that were mentally you know, all the times his father touched him on the shoulder and smiled, like, and they didn't. They trusted us to know, like, to be right there with Elliot, like, oh my god, let's
there's got to be a solid 3 minutes that the camera is just on Elliot, and we never cut away from him, and those are some of the most powerful moments in the entire series.
Voodoo is what these people do.
I also want to give props to USA as a network for just having the balls to run an ad-free episode of television. Like, I know they're doing it for the prestige. I know they're doing it for the future of their network and the ads they will sell in coming seasons of other shows. But I still think it takes a certain amount of like faith in a creator, faith in the art, in order to run this and say, we're not going to make any money off of this episode.
You sure it's not a cynical play for the hearts of viewers in this age of big, giant conglomerates and Disney Plus and HBO Max and Hulu, fuck you, that's like, hey, remember, we ran the entirety of episode 7, Mr. Robot, that commercial interruptions consumer. Yeah. We're one of the good guys.
They're banking goodwill, for sure.
Yeah.
But also, it's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's noted.
It worked. It worked noted. On me, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. That has value, just like the barrel of oil. Like,
now I got to go watch Billions. God damn it. Suits, maybe, too. I can't. I don't know.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Let's get into feedback. Feedback you can be sent to robot@baldmove.com, or you can talk with your fellow fans on our forums, forums.baldmove.com. Sorry. AV's up first. Just an FYI that Olivia is played by Dominic Garcia Laurido, which happens to be the actor Andy Garcia's daughter. Am I seeing a pattern here? Meryl Streep's daughter, Andy Garcia's daughter. Some fucking Hollywood nepotism going on in here. What the hell? Well, it's like, it's a fun little game to see anyone that you think is really amazing, like artist, like a musician or an actor that comes out of nowhere. Look up their parents. Almost they're always famous, rich, or a combination of both.
Yeah.
Because
you think Nicolas Cage got to where he is.
Yeah, especially when they're real young and they're that good. Like, that's a person that has been honing their craft for a lot longer than high school drama class. You know what I mean?
Mm, yeah.
So doesn't surprise me that she was amazing then. Also, did you know that Rami Malek has a twin? He has an identical twin brother named Sammy, and they look exactly the same. I'm mortally certain that this comes up every other season of Mr. Robot, and it always blows me the fuck away. Like, his brother is just a little bit chubbier, just like got a little bit more flesh on his bones. Otherwise, yeah, they're the same fucking person. Do you think there's...
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of him. Pretty damn similar.
Is there any kind of, like, Linda Hamilton type of... you know, like what they did with the Terminator 2 with her twin. Yeah, do you think they're going to do anything fun with that identical twin possibility? They can do
that's
Mr. Robot 2.
Fucking thing I need.
Robot 2 places at once without green screen.
Yeah, his third personality, his third alter is his brother, Sammy Malek.
Thick robot.
I find it hilarious that they're named Rami and Sammy.
Yeah. Also,
and spelled R-A-M-I-S-A-M-I.
Parents are insane. Yeah. Insane playing with that kind of fire.
I'm glad I got parents that didn't name me or name my brother exactly like one letter off from my
Jim
name.
And Bim.
Yeah, Jim and
Finn.
Dim.
Christopher writes in and wants to know if we think that Elliot actually spiked Olivia's drink. He says, I know it's implied that he did, but there's no proof that it happened. If it happens, it happened off screen. And like other blackmail threats, it's best if the threat isn't as bad as it could have been.
No, I think he did.
Yeah. And then, like, I think it's also one of those things where I don't think it matters, you know? The blackmail works the exact same way regardless. So
yeah, but I think he did. If he didn't, it removes the emotional punch from the scenes where she's calling him out on it. And B, I would think Olivia as a former drug abuser would know the feeling.
Sure.
And she would say, you didn't drug me. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. I feel nothing right now.
Yeah, it's like she's not your 13-year-old kid sister you're going to sell oregano to and say it's weed,
right.
You know? Like, nah, I'm not. This is some shitty product, man.
Yeah.
Connor, do you think that we are given two seasons crammed into one for this final season? I love what they've done with this final season, but can't help but wonder if it would have been better to space out the Vera plot and the Dark Army White Rose arcs into separate seasons. In general, I think that media is ruined by stretching it out rather than compressing it. There's a few times where like stuff's been butchered. Mm-hmm. But I think, and I think Mr. Robot already in the first three seasons had a little bit of fat on their bones. I guess from that standpoint, I'm glad that if that was a debate that they're doing it in the one slightly maximum season, then, you know, splitting it off in the Vera season and the White Rose season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think season two was the worst of Mr. Robot for me.
Yeah.
And it was also the slowest. It didn't move the plot ahead very much. Everything they're doing to push the plot ahead forward is working in season four.
Dan in Connecticut, at about an hour into your season 4, episode 2 podcast, you're wondering if S-Mail writing himself in the show as God. And I immediately thought of Breakfast of Champions. This is a book about free will, and it closes with Kurt Vonnegut entering the story as the author slash god to speak to one of his characters.
Spoiler alert, Jesus.
Yeah. I want to say it's been done and it can work. You got to trust an S-mail. Then I wondered if he seeded the show with any references to Breakfast. I just finished rewatching the entire show, searching for Vonnegut books on shelves, and I found an extremely overt reference. Breakfast is set in Midland City, which is the name of Ray's website. Ray, of course, being the, what do you call that? With renal failure, where you have to have your dialysis. He's the dialysis
office
guy.
Space. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or exactly. Not office space. The office.
Yeah, exactly. So, hero to the pod or to the show here, watching the whole thing, looking for Kurt Vonnegut references,
and found one. Exactly.
One Breakfast of Champion reference.
Okay. Okay.
So, Deborah, from some reason, I had this gut instinct to go back and watch the 90s sitcom they did at the beginning of season 2, episode 7, which always seemed off to me somehow. Like it was really about, or it was supposed to be about the Tyrell and Elliot plot, even though it seemed like it did not. In light of tonight's episode, if you rewatch that sitcom section, this script becomes extra creepy. Like, for starters, the theme song lyrics. Imagine yourself in a world numb with pain where the crazies believe in their twisted love. Or the dad telling Elliot that he's imagining the body in front of him, a.k.a. the baggage that's been hidden in the trunk all along. And Elliot screaming, he's right in front of us, we're staring at him, am I the only one who's that batshit crazy? The dad saying, it'll feel good if you let it. The dad basically forcing Elliot to throw the baggage back in the trunk. The dad saying, son, I know your gut's saying not to trust me, but why don't you just try going along with it? In context of today's episode, there's this moment where Elliot gets super quiet and then talks about his family vacation was the moment that he got buried. Yeah, I think that there's going to be a cottage industry on Reddit and on our forums and elsewhere of people going back and mining all of these, like, very in light of the current episode, dark moments. And, everyone that gets surfaced makes the reveal that much more impressive, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Travis has a dissenting opinion in this episode. I'm not a fan of this season's structure or pacing. We're more than halfway done with the season and still have a ton of White Rose and third alter ego stuff to get through, and then Esmail dumps this episode on us? For me, I could understand Edward Alderson being abusive, but being a pedophile seems out of left field to me. It feels like something created for season 4 than retcon to fit the series as a whole. It could be... and yes, it does feel out of left field, but it's kind of like Bruce Willis as a ghost at the end of Sixth Sense left field. Like, you didn't expect it, but, you know, on further review. But there, you know, there again, I guess that's because I even said at the beginning, like, either one of this could be true. This is either just an amazing reveal intended in the beginning or something that they realized was there as they were writing it, and they're trying to pass it off as the former. I don't know why you would do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I was going to comment on some interview with Sam Esmail, but who knows how much credence you should lend to those.
Right.
But the fact that we can go back and it's embedded into even so much as the very first scene of the very first episode of the show, to me, says that this has been something they've been baking the entire time. And I think, like you said, every time somebody uncovers like another recontextualized scene, not only does it make the reveal more juicy, but it makes the reveal more incredible or more, you know, it fills out the path, right? It shows us like, oh, this is the path we've been on the entire time. We just didn't see it. And I think that in my mind is the impressive part. And I think it's why I'm not willing to say, oh, they just retconned this.
Matthew K wants to take this last chance to look forward and make predictions since we're just past the halfway point of the season. Here are some questions. Will we see Mr. Robot again? I think we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Do Elliot, Darlene, or Dom live or die? I'm going to guess Elliot dies, Darlene and Dom live. But also Elliot might die, and like between Darlene and Dom, I think Dom's probably the one more likely to die because it's more tragic.
Another alternative, Elliot lives, Darlene lives, and Dom dies.
I mean, Elliot living and Darlene and Dom dying is like, I don't think Elliot gives a shit about Dom, but Elliot living, Darlene dying is like maximum guilt.
Yeah.
Maximum sacrifice as far as Elliot's perspective, I feel like. Do we feel like we could get a happy ending, and what would that even look like? What would a satisfying ending look like? I feel like we kicked that around a bit.
Kind of, yeah.
Does the 1% get taken down after all? I would think that would be highly unrealistic. Mm-hmm. If whatever the outcome is that there is an instantly fair and equitable division of, you know, economic burdens and boons. Mm-hmm. Like, that just doesn't, that seems as probable as taking over the Dominican Republic in 87 days. Shit, maybe it's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think, like, the worst thing that we might see happen is that White Rose's plans are foiled.
Well, that's the next question. Does White Rose succeed or fail?
I think she probably fails. I think Elliot's able to pull off this hack. White Rose fails. I don't know. Is Elliot going to be brought in? Because, like, White Rose wants to try and convince him that they're on the same side, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've got a few hours before this meeting. They surely don't know where Elliot is at this point, do they?
Probably not.
He was stuffed in a trunk, driven across the city. I can't imagine they know. How are they going to find him, get him there before the meeting, and try and convince him not to do this hack?
Yeah. And how is Darlene going to find them without the app that she's got?
Man, this is the longest Christmas day in history.
Yeah.
But
it's going to get longer. We still got several hours before the big meet. There was, Tom, a therapist friend from Atlanta. Something I was questioning is he actually was really impressed as a therapist about how well they showed this depiction of trauma response. In fact, he said it was the most accurate depiction of a trauma response in a session I've ever seen on TV. So that was interesting because, like, again, I had big questions about, like, how kind of real this stuff was, and at least that part of it was real.
Tom, known for his gunpoint therapy technique.
Yeah.
He's pioneered it. He's quite good at it.
It's a shame more insurances don't pay for it because it's so fucking effective.
You need a combination of mental and physical health insurance for that.
Kristen had a really long and thoughtful email, and I'm fortunately going to have to shorten on the fly. She was blown away by the revelations about Elliot's past, as we all were. She was thinking about all the different scenes and contexts. And one of the things she thought was interesting is, like, did Edward Alderson die of cancer? Which I think you asked as well. I'm going to say yes. I feel like that's independently verified by several outside people. It's why him and Angela bonded, because both of their parents worked at the same facility and died of the same cancer. Mm-hmm. You're saying that you're a little bit more open to it being true from a different point of view, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she also wanted to say, what of the other Aldersons knew the truth about what's happening between Elliot and Edward? Darlene?
I don't think Darlene knows.
I think Darlene's, like, she was too young and she just saw Elliot. Like, now she knows her brother is psychologically disturbed and has prone to outbursts of violence. Like, him just grabbing a bat and turning on his dad, jumping out a window, is just like, well, that's Elliot being Elliot. Right. So I don't think she knew. The mom, there's that, like, I got to go see, like, some of these scenes, like, this, them at sitting and talking at the hospital in context.
Weren't there scenes with her in when Elliot's in prison?
Right.
Talking in the kitchen.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, when did she start abusing Elliot? Because, you know, there's a lot of weird reactions parents can have to revelations that their children are being abused by their mate, you know? Denial, you know, thinking that they're making it up and being destructive. Then the father dies, and I don't know. Like, there's some things that I'm kind of up in the air about, but, like, it wouldn't. I think the mom knew, but what her reaction was to it, I'm not sure, because I would buy that both of these parents were abusive of Elliot in their way, and it's kind of was that way from the beginning, and maybe Elliot shielded as much as he could. Shielded Darlene as much as he could from that. But that's the feedback we got this week. Thanks for everybody for submitting. And again, I apologize. I had way too much feedback that we could read in our allotted time this week. If you'd like to try again next week, where does the season go from here?
I mean, it's got to go to the hack, right? It's got to go to a meeting with White Rose, the hack.
There might be one more episode where they can kind of set the table, because that hack kind of feels like it might need an episode to breathe to. And, like, it'd be very improbable for me to believe that Elliot's going to roll from this episode right into the hack without missing a beat.
Sure.
And there's time, like, if you're right about the sundown thing, there's, like, anywhere between 90 minutes and 3 hours to kill. So I would like to see an episode where maybe they do a little bit of table setting and processing of what just happened.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll be back next week for another complete breakdown of the episode. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.